So we are continuing Canto 3, Chapter 6 of the Bhagavatam. And we're on text 33 today. And it's a continuation. We didn't finish this chapter last week. And so we're hearing right now about how when the universe was created, there was a prototype of the Varnashrama system. Okay, so on text 33, it says, thereafter, service was manifest from the legs of the personality of Godhead for the sake of perfecting the religious function. Situated on the legs are the sudras who satisfy the Lord by service. And in the purport, Srila Prabhupada writes, and he's reading very clear about this so-called caste system in Varnashram. He said, it's actually better to be a sudra than to be a brahmana if not develop and not develop the service attitude, because the service attitude alone satisfies the Lord. And then at the end of the purport, a disordered society cannot satisfy either the members of the society or the Lord. Even if one is not a perfect Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Sudra, but takes to the service of the Lord, not caring for the perfection of his social position, he becomes a perfect human being simply by developing the attitude of service to the Lord. So the I hope that by now this is very clear that the present, what is called the caste system, is not what Krishna teaches in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna clearly says, guna karma vibhagasa. He says that one has a certain occupation according to their guna, their personal qualities, and their karma, the kind of work they do, not according to janma. So when you open up the Hindustan Times, and you on Sunday they have this big advertisements about, you know, Gujarati brahmanas seeking... Brahmani seeking, you know, similar. And then they usually say he should have at least a master's degree, right? And make so much money. This is not the Vedas. This is not the system that Krishna teaches in the Bhagavad Gita. But rather, it doesn't matter what one is. If one has the attitude of service towards the Lord, then they attain perfection. These other things... are there for the Varnashram system is there for the running of a peaceful society, but not for, you know, Brahmins thinking, well, I'm the Brahmin, so you should just do whatever I say. You know, we said this last week, the Brahmin's mood is one of servant. In the traditional Vedic society, the Brahmins would go, they maybe be an astrologer and they give free astrological advice or free medical advice or free spiritual advice. They weren't thinking, hey, you know, I'm a Brahmin, you're a Vaishya, you listen to me, buddy. You know, but it was, everyone was in a mood of service and nobody cared if one was, whatever one was, because ultimately these are temporary designations. They only last as long as this body lasts. So the Brahmin this lifetime may be, you know, whatever in the next lifetime, right? But also, they're all meant to serve Krishna. And so that's what this verse is saying, you know, okay, so maybe the head is a very important part of the body, but it's good to have legs that work also. It's good to have a stomach that works. It's good to have arms that work. So there's also a social body, and they're supposed to work in unison and not what has turned out to be in some places, this idea that things are based upon birth. So any questions on that? Any doubts? Okay, then we'll move on. All these different social divisions are born with their occupational duties and living conditions from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus, for unconditional life and self-realization, one has to worship the Supreme Lord under the direction of the spiritual master. And we're kind of skipping. O Vidura, who can estimate or measure the transcendental time, work, and potency of the gigantic form manifested by the internal potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So what's going on now until the end of this chapter, it's just a few verses, is kind of wonder about the, you know, just the awe and reverence, appreciation for the universal form, right? And Prabhupada writes the first sentence, the froggish philosophers may go on with their mental speculations on the subject matter of the virat, the gigantic form exhibited by the yoga maya internal potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But factually, no one can measure such vastness, such a vast exhibition. So just like this week, right, people were actually quite happy, right, that for once there was some news besides politics, right, that NASA had found seven planets that could inhabit, that could be what they think people could live on, basically. Let me see, I thought I had it up here, but maybe I don't. Anyway, they're some 200 or 700 light years away, right? And it was kind of a reprise from the other news that we had people hear, right? But we should understand that from someone like Srila Prabhupada's point of view, it's a joke. That here we are, we're these teeny little people on this teeny little planet. And wow, it's like, you know, those planets have existed. And then now we kind of think, oh, now we found them, you know, but they've gone on. And there's, you know, literally what I read last week, billions and billions of such planets, right, in the various universes, at least that's the speculation of scientists, right? And for someone like Prabhupada, he could just, you know, based on his understanding of the Vedas, write this off like, this is childish. Yeah, you know, for a lot of people in this world, it's really cool. You have this amazing telescope. What was it? The Hubble, that was called. You know, anyway, you have these amazing things that can see, right? Right into, you know, light years away and all these different things. But understanding the vastness of the universe from the Vedic literature, you know, it looks like a child playing with a little mini telescope. They can, you know, see your nose closely or something like that, you know. It's not so impressive. And that's why Prabhupada says, the froggish philosophers may go on with their mental speculations on the subject of the virat, the universe, the gigantic form exhibited by the yoga maya internal potency. But factually, no one can measure such a vast exhibition. And that is only 1/4 of this size of the spiritual world. Right. So from his point of view, so someone who actually takes the Vedas as they are, it's... And then at the very end, where, you know, Prabhupada goes on and says, it's so hard to estimate all this, you can't figure it out. Then he says, the best path, this is the last sentence, is to become a cool-headed, submissive devotee of the Lord. Try to hear about the Lord from the bona fide spiritual master and thus serve the Lord in transcendental loving service as suggested in the previous verse. Because knowledge, because relationship and knowledge or love and knowledge go hand in hand. When you actually have a loving relationship with someone, then you really learn about them. As we gave that example last week, right? That you can't tell about a farmer and, you know, how much money he has in his bank account or what his kids are like or what his wife is like or what his hobbies are by examining his field of corn or of wheat. You may study the corn or wheat forever and you're still not going to understand what the farmer's like. You might, I guess if you study it long enough, you might know that, you know, he plants things certain times of the year and cult, but you're not going to know about his various things. So it's a nice example. Any thoughts on that? Okay. In spite of my inability, whatever I have been able to hear from the spiritual master and whatever I could assimilate, I am now describing in glorification of the Lord by pure speech, for otherwise my power of speaking would remain unchaste. So he's basically, you know, Maitreya is saying, I am limited, right? But, because, and this is what Prabhupada would say, because I'm quoting authority, then I can say it boldly. Right? Yeah, that's humility, yeah. So Maitreya is saying, because I'm limited, but because I'm doing this the right way, I can answer your questions, even though they're really hard questions. And next chapter, we're going to hear about even harder questions, right? Piercing questions, you could say. So even Srila Prabhupada would sometimes say that, you know, because he would sometimes speak very boldly. And he'd say, you are a mudha, you're an ass. And then he'd say, but I'm not saying that. Krishna says in the Gita, I'm just repeating Krishna's, you know, he would say, don't take it personally, it's not nothing personal, I'm just repeating Krishna's words. So Srila Prabhupada would tell us that when we're speaking from Shastra, we can speak boldly and authoritatively. That doesn't mean unkindly. It doesn't mean that. But it means we can say, this is what Krishna says. The highest perfectional stage, the highest perfectional gain of humanity is to engage in discussions, and now he's turning it to the what we should be doing in our life. The highest perfectional gain of humanity is to engage in discussions of the activities and glories of the pious actor, capital P, capital A, right? Such activities are so nicely arranged in writing by the greatly learned sages that the actual purpose of the ear is served just by being near them. Oh, my son, the original poet, Brahma, after mature meditation for 1,000 celestial years, could know only that the glories of the Supreme Soul are inconceivable. So that's, yeah. What's that? Conclusion of Brahma. Again, so if we accept that we, you know, yeah, we believe there is a person named Brahma, and his intelligence is as great as his life is long, 311 trillion years, then we think, well, I should probably come to the same conclusion Brahma is coming to. And if we think it's mythology and all that, well, then, you know, we can go on with whatever we want to go on. But to seriously accept the statements of the Shastra, this is what happened to Brahma. He did mature, he meditated, not for, you know, 20 minutes, right? Like I used to do when I was studied transcendental meditation, you know. He did it for thousands of years, celestial years. And after that, his conclusion was, I don't know what I'm talking about. Krishna's inconceivable. Right. So if we, you know, if we think about that, it's, I was listening to a lecture yesterday by Srila Prabhupada. He was saying, we have potencies, right? We actually have potency, just like our hair grows. He said, that's a potency. That our hair grows, right? That was the example he gave. And so many, you know, our fingernails, you know, so many things happen in our life. We can move from here to there. That's, we have that potency. So he said, what to speak of person who gave that potency to every living entity? Right? Not even just humans, but every living, you know, humans are small time, right? How many humans on the planet? 7 billion? No, so that's species. Yeah, that's 7 billion maybe? Yeah. So how many, you know, microbes are there compared to that? 7 billion each person. Yeah, yeah. So you see we're really outnumbered. human beings are definitely outnumbered. Yet we have this human form of life to use properly. So this is so nice. He's saying, listen, don't just believe me. Here, Brahma, he did this. And, you know, in modern parlance, he said, forget about it. You're not going to figure out Krishna. And yet, here he is, playing his flute. And, you know, dancing with the gopis and being chastised by his friends. So that's like, you know, it's like, wait, you know, that's so amazing that that we have the chance to hear about God in his most intimate relations. Any thoughts on this? Yes.
Well, that's the contradiction, one of the contradictions people have to deal with, because it shows right here that the only logical way to approach God is to assume that coming from the side where he's completely ineffable, impossible to comprehend. But on the other hand, we're trying to have a relationship. So we're trying to have a relationship with something that is, we can't possibly know what it is, really, or what he is.
We can't know.
So there's a contradiction.
That actually comes up in the next chapter a little bit. Yes, and we can't know him fully, right? His vastness, for example, that's what's being discussed here, not the person Krishna, but the vastness of his, just, right? And we can't even know Krishna fully, because even if someone knows Krishna fully, then he expands, he's always becoming more wonderful, right? Yet, he reveals himself to the devotee. Enough that we're like totally overwhelmed. Because even if you know this much about the person Krishna, it's just like a tidal wave of happiness and ecstasy. So we read, I'll just finish one sentence and you can, okay. So we might read how he plays a flute and has a peacock feather and wears yellow garments, and we're thinking like, I read about that, but I don't have much understanding of that. As we serve him and please him, that becomes a reality to us gradually. So you were going to say something.
Hare Krishna. So just like Brahma came to a conclusion, means the devotees, they keep getting bewildered. So there was a response that Srila Prabhupada gave, was that don't try to understand Krishna, just love Krishna and serve him. I think that's the best approach. And of course, we get transcendental bliss. We experience that joy when we hear about Krishna and glorify Krishna. So that's another aspect. Yes, we don't understand, but we need to know how great the God is. Everyone says God is great. But by hearing the glories, we realize how great the God is. He's inconceivable. Yes, the greatness, what we experience is still minuscule, doesn't even amount to anything. Yet at the same time, that is so attractive.
Nice. Yeah, Srila Prabhupada's spiritual master said, don't try to see Krishna. Act in such a way that Krishna will want to see you. You were going to say something?
I bumped into a kind of Mayavadi yesterday.
Kind of Mayavadi?
I'm not sure. Yeah, because he was not saying God is, we are all one, I am God. But he was leaning more towards speculation, like to understand God.
Right.
So I asked him, then what do you do once you... through speculation, once you realize who is God, what do you do? He was confused, and then that's the goal, that's it. So
right.
I was just appreciating the process of bhakti, like we start from serving and we continue,
Yeah, because that's who we are.
Yes.
Ekala Ishwar Krishna Arsabhritya. That everyone is Krishna's, there's one, But it's what's tricky, and it comes up in the next chapter, is that we are, on a certain level, qualitatively one with God. Because we're spiritual. We're actually spiritual. We're actually, it comes up in the next chapter, but we are eternal. It's hard to wrap our mind around it because we're so identifying with this that gets old and does all these different things. Yeah. Other points? So we're almost done with this chapter. Now, the wonderful potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is bewildering even to the juggler. So not these jugglers, juggler of words. That potential power is unknown even to the is unknown even to the self-sufficient Lord. So it is certainly unknown to others. So in other words, sometimes it's said that Krishna tries to understand himself and then his self expands. So he's try to wrap your mind around that one, right? And Prabhupada begins again with the froggish philosophers and mundane wranglers in science and mathematical calculations may not believe in the inconceivable potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but they are sometimes puzzled by the wonderful jugglery of man and nature. So, yes, again, you know, I've tried to point this out, that we don't want to just blindly say, oh, those rascal scientists and things, right? Because they're not, some of the things that they have found we use in Krishna's service, and they are useful for society. It's just that when they go beyond their mandate, right? And try to enter in the realm of theology and things like that, that's what we are concerned about. Because, you know, for this, all the reasons that I mentioned earlier. And then the next part also begins with the froggish. You know what this is referring to, right? The frog in the well, Prabhupada's example? Yes, okay. Right, that the frog is in the well, and the other frog says, I've just come from the Pacific Ocean, and the frog in the well says, well, it's 5 times bigger than my well? Is it 10 times bigger than my well? I can't imagine the ocean. When words, mind, and ego, with their respective controlling demigods, have failed to achieve success in knowing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, therefore we simply have to offer our respectful obeisances unto him as a matter of sanity. Interesting. And Prabhupada writes in the beginning of the purport, the froggish calculator may raise the objection that if the absolute is unknowable, even by the controlling deities of speech, mind, and ego, namely the Vedas, Brahma, and Rudra, and all the demigods headed by Brihaspati, then why should the devotees be so interested in the unknown object? The answer is that the transcendental ecstasy enjoyed by the devotees in delineating the pastimes of the Lord is certainly unknown to non-devotees and mental speculators. Unless one relishes transcendental joy, naturally one will come back from his speculations and concocted conclusions, because he will see them as neither factual nor enjoyable. The devotees can at least know the absolute is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu. So it's a different approach. Right? And it cuts away at, you know, it's not easy in one sense, because there's our personal egos, and then it's kind of a collective ego, right? That we can figure this all out. Right? We can figure out this world, and we can figure out outer space, and we can figure all these things. And it takes a different mindset to say, okay, we try our best to figure some things out, but ultimately knowledge and things beyond our senses come via the mercy of God. That's not easy on the ego, in one sense, because, you know, right? You know, I know for myself, I get a new gadget, and I don't like to read the owner's manual. I like to figure it out for myself. And after 20 minutes of trying to figure out, my wife says, why don't you read the owner? I'll figure it out, you know. So it's kind of like that multiplied by a few thousand, you know. So it is a different approach, and it's not the approach that we're kind of used to in modern society, right? Your average person trying to understand the universe is not going to come to the temple and say, my dear Radha Madamohan, please reveal to me greater understanding of the universe. You know, please let me read the Shastra and get your blessings. That's just not the general approach. That's not what they do at NIH, right?
So yes, Ravin Swarup Prabhu told about this.
Who?
Ravin Swarup Prabhu. He was quoting the NASA slogan in after moon landing or something. We'll conquer the space.
We'll conquer space, yes. So, and then we're all conquered.
Prabhu was saying, like, really?
Right.
So insignificant. He said one interesting sentence, so he could understand this. The foundation of stupidity is path of pride.
Yes, very nice. Foundation of stupidity is a path of pride. Yes. It's so different. Like, even in the traditional, you know, Indian Vedic tradition, Even if you wanted to learn math, right? The idea was that you would please your teacher, right? And that, you know, by having a good relationship with your teacher, you know, your teacher, especially in the traditional Gurukul idea, sense of the word, you know, that they reveal their you know, their secrets, and of course they give their blessings, and that you would learn in that way. And that's just math. What to speak of the spiritual science? So it's, and so, you know, it's not academic alone. That doesn't mean that we should poo-poo academics, right? We should study the Shastra carefully. We should become learned and understand that to fully understand them, we need blessings. It's a very personal thing, the act of learning. It's not just going to a lecture. Any other thoughts on that?
So this Bhaktyamam Abhijanati.
And that verse means, he's saying, quoting a verse in the Gita that says Krishna is only known through loving devotion.
Yeah. And then 7.1 or 2, Prabhupada explains that the complete knowledge is the matter, the spirit behind it, and the source of both.
Yeah. Yes. Because in the 7th chapter of the Gita, in verse 4, Krishna says, okay, so there's these material elements, earth, water, fire, air. Is it 4 or 5?
Four.
Earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, ego. And then he says, aparyasi tasamyam prakritim vidimepram. He says that beyond that, there's the soul. And then he said, beyond both of them is the supreme soul. So that's a nice way to look at it. So you have earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, ego, us, the source of both.
So just if we take this much, is also kind of knowing about Lord, right?
Yes, we know a lot. We know a lot. We just don't know everything.
Yes.
So now, in this next chapter, it's actually an interesting chapter in this sense. First of all, he asks some really almost challenging questions. Vidura asked Maitreya. Basically three questions. And then after a little discussion and up to after verse 23, there's not too many purports, and there's 40 questions. And those make up all the way to the end of the 4th canto. So this much of, you know, of Prabhupada's writings. It's because the 4th canto and the 3rd canto are, except for the 10th canto, they're the largest cantos. So a lot of discussions about one question nestled within another, and questions about the creation, the organization of creation, the lineage of the procreators, the creation's inhabitants and their activities, time, the Lord's incarnations, all these different topics are asked and then are answered over quite a lot, large part of the Srimad Bhagavatam. But let's begin with, first we'll read the first verse, which says, Sri Sukadeva Goswami said, O King, while Maitreya, the great sage, was thus speaking, Vidura, the learned son of Dvaipayana Vyas, expressed a request in a pleasing manner by asking this question. So that's important when you ask questions, to ask them appropriately. There's nothing wrong with asking questions, even a little challenging, but with the right mood. Why is Krishna, who said, you know, no, that's not going to get the answer you're looking for, probably. So now Vidura asks this first question, okay? And it's an interesting question. O great Brahmana, since the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the complete spiritual whole and unchangeable, what does that mean, unchangeable, in this context?
He cannot be separated into parts and then get exhausted.
Okay, he cannot be separated into parts and get, and therefore he can't get exhausted. What else?
Hare Krishna. So, Ishapnishad, the invocation mantra reveals it that he is complete whole, and even though there are so many complete units emanating from him, he stays.
He still remains a complete balance. Okay, balance. That's true. What else? Andy?
The word absolute is the same thing, isn't it?
The word absolute means the same thing, okay.
It's never taken away.
Yeah. Another thing is he cannot be affected by his energies. He can't fall. He's not affected by the three modes of material nature. That's going to come up here. I can see you didn't do your homework, guys. I'm just giving you a hard time. That's a big thing. Unchangeable, because we get changed, right? We get, at least, of course, we're spiritual, but it seems that we get, you know, we go through these vikaras, right? Birth, you know, and all that. But also our minds change, the modes move us around in different things. But Krishna's not affected by the modes. So, unchangeable. How is he connected with the material modes of nature and their activities? So how can he be unchangeable, not affected by the modes? And that's, yeah. If this is his pastime, how do the activities of the unchangeable take place and exhibit qualities without the modes of material nature, without the modes of nature? So that's a good question. Prabhupada writes about three sentences down. By asking various questions about transcendental activities, Vidura is clearing the misconception that when the Lord either descends on the earth in his incarnation or appears himself with all his potencies, he too is subjected to the influence of Maya, just like an ordinary living entity. This is generally the calculation of less intelligent philosophers who consider the position of the Lord and that of the living entities to be on the same level. And then I'm just going to read one sentence in the next paragraph. Similarly, the material potency is not different from the Lord because it is an emanation from him, but at the same time, that manifestation of potency is not the Supreme Lord. Now, that could sound a little tricky. It's not that, but do we get, this is a really important point. I think we, most of us as devotees, we understand this or we have kind of it, but it's so important that everything is God, right? Because everything is the energy, is emanating from him, but he still remains as a person. So another way to look at it is there's only two things in existence, God and his energies. So there's the material, just the general categories of energies, there's this material, these things, right? Then there's us, the tatastha shakti, or the marginal energy. And then there's the spiritual energy, ultimately Srimati Radharani, in the Ladini Shakti of the Lord. So there's these three. So there's just Parashya Shaktir Vividhaya Suyate is the verse that Prabhupada would often quote. That there's God and his energies. Okay? So in one sense, the energies, because they're coming from God, are also God. In one sense. But not in the Mayavad sense. So I was just reading in the 11th canto yesterday a really nice thing. This is taking this discussion up here to the topmost. But talking about the difference between separation from Krishna and associating with Krishna. Because, like, you know, in Vrindavan, sometimes the associates have Krishna's association. Sometimes they have what they call vipralamba seva, or service and separation. So it was said that... if you're, someone was saying that separation is stronger, one of the people replying to King Nimi in the ninth, in the nine yogendras in the 11th canto, that, but they were saying, well, if you associate with Krishna directly, you only associate with, you only see Krishna right there. But for the pure devotee, they see everything, because it's Krishna's energy, they see Krishna, so they see Krishna all over the place. So in that sense, they were glorifying the mood of separation. Of course, the mood of separation is glorified for other reasons, right? It's that anticipation and that longing that is actually even more intense than being with a person. I've told you this story, right? If you want to see a little Vipralamba Seva, go to Dulles Airport to the international arrivals, right? And just watch the people. Watch the people as they're kind of anxious, right? And they're, you know, kind of heightened anxiety as one person comes out of the, you know, arrivals after another. No, it's not, you know. then finally it's the person they're looking for. Then after a few minutes they've been with him and saying, like, oh, okay, you know. But for that first, you know, the intensity is there. It's my favorite part of Dulles Airport. You don't get that at National because it's as much, because it's not international. It's only local travel. Okay, so now comes, oh, sorry. So that was the question. And let's see, I'm going to read, okay, question, verse 3 also continues that question. Boys are enthusiastic to play with other boys or with various diversions because they are encouraged by desire. But there is no possibility of such desire for the Lord because he is self-satisfied and detached from everything at all times. So what desires does God have? He has everything. He doesn't need anything. He has no material desires. Okay? So what we need to do, and if this is okay, we're going to skip to verse 9 for the answer. Okay? And then we'll go back, I promise. But verse 9 answers actually a lot of these questions. So Maitreya says, certain conditioned souls put forward the theory that the supreme Brahman, or the personality of Godhead, is overcome by illusion or Maya. And at the same time, they maintain that he is unconditioned. This is against all logic. Okay? And a little down in the purport, she'll probably give some explanation that I really like. They say that although the sun is all light, the clouds, darkness, and snowfall are all parts and parcel of the sun. This is... when they say they, these are great acharyas, they're saying this, Jiva Goswami, Vishnu, Chakraparti Thakur. Without the sun, there's no possibility of the skies being overcast with clouds or darkness, nor can there be snowfall on the earth, right? Although life is sustained by the sun, life is also disturbed by darkness and snowfall. Not this year, last year. And snowfall produced by the sun. But it is also a fact that the sun itself is never overcome by darkness, clouds, or snowfall. Right? We all experience that when we go in an airplane. It can be a gloomy, dismal day at Reagan Airport. And then when you can see I travel a lot. And when you break past the clouds, it's a sunny day. But it is also a fact that the sun itself is never overcome by darkness, clouds, or snowfall. The sun is far, far away from such disturbances. Only those who have a poor fund of knowledge say the sun is covered by a cloud or by darkness. Similarly, the supreme Brahman, or the Parabrahman, or the personality of Godhead, is always unaffected by the influence of the material energy, although it is one of his energies. There's, I quoted this verse, Parashya Shaktir Vividhaya Suyute. There is no reason to assert that the supreme Brahman is overpowered by the illusory energy. The clouds, darkness, and snowfall can cover only a very insignificant portion of the sun's rays. See the example? It's such a nice, right? It doesn't do nothing, right? If it's cloudy in Washington, D.C. one day, does that affect the sun? Not even in the least. It's a total joke. The sun's just... Similarly, the modes of material nature may react upon the ray-like living entities, us. It is the misfortune of the living entity, certainly not without reason. I like that part, that sentence there. It's a misfortune of the living entities, but not without reason, that the influence of the material energy acts on his pure consciousness and eternal bliss. In other words, we've chosen to be an illusion. This covering up of pure consciousness and eternal bliss is due to, here's a nice thing to understand, avidya karma samgya, the energy which acts on the infinitesimal living entities who misuse their minute independence. This is a nice word, infinitesimal. What is the opposite of infinitesimal? The opposite.
Unlimited.
Right, infinite. Infinite. Yes. So we are infinitesimal, and Krishna is infinite. You know, we are so insignificant, it's scary. Right? You know, 100 years from now, who's going to know Rajavihari Das? Just, and, you know, he gave some classes on Sundays somewhere, temple. You know, it was like nothing. Right? We're so insignificant. Yet, in Krishna's eyes, what's really cool about it is that we're very significant in Krishna's eyes. That's what's amazing. Krishna's happy if one of his parts and parcels goes back to Godhead to associate with him. So we're lucky we have that relationship with someone who has so many relationships and still thinks we're important. Right? Isn't that a nice feeling, right? You know, if like Jiva, isn't it a nice feeling if Gopal Krishna Maharaj comes here and, you know, he comes once a year and he's seen thousands of people and still he goes up to you and says, Jiva Tuff, everything okay? Right? So that gives you some hint. So any thoughts on this? So is this clear now? The question was, is God influenced by his illusory energy? What? Was that the question? I think it was. Let's see. Let's go back. In what's that? The question number two was, O great Brahmana, since the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the complete spiritual whole and is unchangeable, how is he connected with the modes of material nature? Yeah. So he's not connected. He's the source of them. Yes. So now the next questions come in three, four and five, I think. Hold on. Four and five. So in verse four, he, by his self-sheltered potency of the three modes of material nature, so they're accepting it's his potency, the Lord has caused the creation of this universe. By her, he maintains the creation and conversely dissolves it again and again. The pure soul is pure consciousness and is never out of consciousness, either due to circumstances, times, situations, dreams, or other causes. How then does he become engaged in nescience? So how is it that we're pure, spiritual soul, and how were we overcome by avidya, not ignorance? That's the next question. Okay? And in the purport to 5, Prabhupada writes, he's, how then can the living entity become forgetful of his real identity as pure spirit soul and identify with matter unless influenced by something beyond himself? That makes sense? I know this is a bit philosophical. Does that make sense? You have to be, you know, how we're totally spiritual. That's who we are. Yet we're in illusion. So where does that illusion come from? It has to come from something outside of us that is imposed upon us. But the cool thing, the interesting thing about this, it's imposed upon us by our desire. Not that God is at fault for us being in illusion or for the sufferings that we go through. We've chosen Krishna Bhuli Sejiv Anadhir Bahir Muk. We've chosen to turn our back on Krishna. It's our free choice. Can't blame anybody else. We're, you know, it's so much the conditioned soul's thing to blame everyone except ourselves for things, right? Now we have, you know, we can say, oh, it's the politics in America, that's why I'm depressed, or it's this or that, or right? And therefore, right, the saying is we should carry our weather with us, right? Somebody will say, oh, well, you know, how can I be happy? It's so cloudy, it's miserable, the weather's terrible. Of course, can't say that last week, right? But a devotee tries to carry the weather with him. They don't blame circumstances. Okay, so let's continue this. The conclusion is that the living entity is influenced by the avidya potency. What does avidya mean? Ignorance. What does vidya mean? Knowledge. So avidya means ignorance, yes. as confirmed in the Vishnu Purana and the beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam. The living entity is mentioned in Bhagavad Gita as para prakriti. What does that mean? Prakriti means nature. Para means spiritual nature. Para prakriti. There's also apara prakriti, which is earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and ego. And in the Vishnu Purana, he is mentioned as Parashakti. Same point, Shakti means energy. Right? He is part and parcel of the Supreme Lord as potency and not as the potent. Right? Krishna is the potent and he has potencies. And we're one of those potencies. Okay? The potent can exhibit many potencies, but the potency cannot equal the potent at any stage. One potency may be overcome by another potency, but to the potent, all potencies are under control. So we're a potency. Maya is a potency. Maya can overcome us. Neither of those potencies can overcome Krishna. Okay. The jiva potency, that's us, or the kshetragya shakti of the Lord, that's from the 13th chapter of the Gita, has the tendency to be overpowered by the external potency, avidya karma samgya. And in this way, he is placed in the awkward circumstances of material existence. The living entity cannot be forgetful of his real identity unless influenced by the avidya potency. So how often do we think that as we're going through the day and our mind is going here and there and we're thinking, oh, geez, I'm so influenced by the avidya potency. But that's actually what's happening. It's very, very strong. Because otherwise, we're totally spiritual, we're eternal, we have a relationship with Krishna eternally. Yet we think we're American, we think we're from India, we think we're a man, we think we're a woman, we think we're an engineer, we think we're an IT specialist, we think we're this, we think we're that. All these are not actually who we are. Our swarup is Krishna Das. Or in Krishna Dasi, right? Our swarup, the swarup of sugar is to be sweet. The swarup of salt is to be salty. The swarup of a chili, a good, real chili, right, is to be hot. And our swarup is to have an eternal loving relationship with God. Yet the avidya shakti just overwhelming us and giving us so much trouble. Yeah, by our choosing disobedience. That's right. So we can't blame Maya. It's kind of like if Maya was you've heard this example, right? If Maya was a tree, we would be hugging the tree and at the same time saying, let me go, let me go, let me go. That's the contradiction that we experience sometimes in our life, right? That we don't want to be in Maya, but at the same time, I think I like it here. Not so bad. After all, the weather was good last week, right? It's all nice. Any thoughts on this? I know it's deep stuff because it's going right down to our who we really are.
The whole thing became full circle. I mean, the whole point of most religions is to discover God and wonder at, this creation, all he did. But this shows that really, even though we can't do anything to Krishna, we influenced him. Because the purpose of this whole creation is our disobedience. So he said, well, if you're going to be disobedient, then the only way it can be is like this, right, with the creation. So it's really from our
desire.
Yeah. Is what influenced Krishna to do what he did. So it's a phase beyond of what he did. It's why did he do it?
There's so many examples. And the example is of a prison house, right? Even the best government has to have a prison house because some people are going to be belligerent and not follow the rules. So here we are. Yep.
Hearing Prabhu's explanation now, but the influencing Krishna, is it the right way? Like, our,
it may be the wrong, maybe not be the influence, may be not the best word choice.
Yeah,
but it, because ultimately he's totally independent.
Right.
But he does. But at the same time, he says he's influenced because he'll say, you quoted it, Bhakti Mama Bijananti, right?
Because that's kind of.
Or he'll say, yeah, yeah.
Compassion.
Yes. Radha definitely influences Krishna. You can forget about that. Yeah. As they say, he definitely influences Krishna. Yes, and the and Srila Prabhupada would sometimes say, Mayavadis want to become one with God. We want to become greater than God. He said, control him by what? By love. Yeah. Not that we actually, create universes. Obviously, we don't do that. But he was just making that point that. So yes, it's we don't in our level of Krishna consciousness, we don't usually think too much about our influence on Krishna, but he reciprocates as he wishes, but he reciprocates with love of his devotees.
Trying to understand this, even though we are superior prakriti, how is that the inferior prakriti is overpowering the superior prakriti? Is it just because disconnection from the Supreme? And the
that's one way to look at it, yes. Another way to look at it is our desire. We want that.
So even though we are so tiny, but when we reestablish that connection or in link, in connection with the Supreme, then the inferior prakriti cannot overpower.
Right. Right. Of course, our what you just said is absolutely philosophically right. And our practical experience is that it's a spectrum. It's not either totally Krishna conscious or totally in Maya, but we're different in different locations along that spectrum. Therefore, Krishna says in the fourth chapter of the Gita, yayatam mam prapadyante, that it's a reciprocal thing. As we give ourselves to Krishna, he reciprocates. But because we're not giving ourselves 100% to Krishna right now, we're not getting 100% shelter from Maya. But also Maya means mercy. Maya means illusion. It also means mercy, right? Because, it's just like sometimes a parent will be like, they'll say something like, not literally, but figuratively, my child needs a good, kick in the pants. In other words, you need some kind of impetus, right? You come home with a C on your report card, and, your parents don't talk to you for a week, and all you get is, Khichdi. and you kind of get the message that if I want paneer sabjis again and stuff like that, I better get my act together. So Maya is, through the threefold miseries, kind of like saying, this is not your permanent home. Don't be so happy here. It's just, there's adiatmic, adibhotic, adidaivic. There's the weather. There's other people and all that. There's other living. There's mosquitoes. There's old age. There's disease. There's death. None of those things we can stop. It's not, that's in that sense, mercy. Yes, sir.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Okay, Gita said, Arjuna asked, okay, in Gita said, one verse, Arjuna asked to Krishna, there are every living entity is a two soul. One is individual soul, and one is supreme soul.
Correct.
So, verse said, that you have to cultivate your adhyatmic soul, which is a super soul, while you're living in a material world, all the misery world, how we can elevate your other soul, supreme soul? How can, because we are constant
right,
in a material world, and we are completely diluted by this material
Yeah. Nice.
So it is how we can close this individual soul and cultivate adhyatmic soul. So in the end of the life, on the last breath, you can remember him, because when you are old, your all function is choke up and
your
will be disrupted, your all function in body. So at that time, you'll be, if you cultivate your material soul, you'll be remember that, and yes, you don't go Vaikuntha.
That's good. Good point. Yeah, it's not easy. Two things come to my mind. First of all, the example that you're giving, one of the simple example that's our analogy that's given is two birds in a tree. One is us, and one is Krishna in the form of the super soul. And we, you know, we kind of, usually we're ignoring the other bird, and we're just, you know, checking out the fruit on the tree and trying to, you know. But if we could turn towards that bird and the other bird and develop a relationship. And you're right that that's why it's good to try to cultivate Krishna consciousness when we're young and healthy, or at least healthy, even if we're not so young, while our senses are strong and we're in, you know, because it is harder as we get older, right? Some people like we used to see this when I used to spend a lot of time in India, and we go up to a person and say, well, you know, you should really become a devotee of Krishna. I said, I will. Bhagme, you know, I'll do it, you know, a little later in, you know, when I get, you know, right now I'm really absorbed in something else, right? And even great devotees, King Krulashekar, he had a beautiful prayer that said, Krishna tvadiya parapanka japanka janya. And he said that now while I'm healthy, let the lotus of my mind, what is that bird? The crane of my mind enter into the lotus of Krishna's lotus feet. Anyway, he's saying, let me remember Krishna now, yeah. So, but at the same time, Prabhupada also said very nicely that if we serve Lord Chaitanya throughout our life, and if because of, like you were saying, all the problems of the time of death, and it's very hard to remember him, Krishna, Lord Chaitanya, will enter your mind because you've served him so nicely throughout your life. So we have hope. So thank you for that question.
So remember Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
Good idea. Yeah. Yes. And there's also a nice saying that if one remember, the most difficult thing becomes easy if one remembers Lord Chaitanya. And the most easy thing can become difficult if one forgets him. So, what's that verse? Satat, about always remembering Krishna? How does it begin? Satatam, what's that? Smartavya satatam Vishnu, vismartavya najatuchit. Always remember Krishna, never forget him. And sarva vidhi nisedhasyor etayor eva kinkram. All the other rules and regulations are servants of that principle. Shall we move on? The Lord as the super soul. There you go. You knew. Did you know that the next verse was all about the super soul? That was very good. The Lord as the super soul is situated in every living being's heart. Why then do the living entities' activities result in misfortune and misery? If God's in your heart, why all these problems? O great and learned one, my mind is greatly illusioned by the distress of this nescience, and I therefore request you to clear it up. Sukadeva Goswami said, so the conversations with Vidura and Maitreya, Sukadeva Goswami is recalling this, right? So that's why it's Sukadeva Goswami. O king, he's speaking to Parikshit Maharaj, Maitreya, being thus agitated by the inquisitive Vidura, at first seemed astonished. Wow, these are tough questions. Right? But then he replied to him without hesitation, since he was fully God conscious. Sri Maitreya said, certain conditioned souls put forward the theory that the Supreme Brahman, or the personality of Godhead, is overcome by illusion, or Maya. And at the same time, oh, well, we read this before, right? And at the same time, they maintain that he's unconditioned. This is against all logic. The living entity is in distress regarding his self-identity. He has no factual background, like a man who dreams he sees his head cut off. So can you dream that you see your head cut off? But then afterwards, how do you see the head? You see? So you can't. And Prabhupada writes in the purport, these activities are performed under the dictation of the illusory energy. The experience is compared to the experience of one having his head cut off in a dream. The man whose head has been cut off also sees that his head has been cut off. If a person's head is severed, he loses his power to see. Therefore, if a man sees that his head has been cut off, it means he thinks like that in hallucination. Similarly, a living entity is eternally subordinate to the Supreme Lord, and he has this knowledge with him, but artificially he thinks that he is God himself, and that although he is God, he has lost his knowledge due to Maya. This conception has no meaning, just as there is no meaning to seeing one's head being cut off. This is the process by which knowledge is covered. And because this artificial, rebellious condition of the living entity gives him all troubles, it is to be understood that he should take to his normal life as a devotee of the Lord and be relieved from the misconception of being God. The so-called liberation of thinking oneself God is the last reaction, or another place, the last snare of avidya, by which the living entity is entrapped. The conclusion is that a living entity deprived of eternal transcendental service to the Lord becomes illusioned in so many ways. Any thoughts on that? So it's very strong. We're living a dream in one sense. Because we're, but it's a very, the thing is, the dream doesn't mean it doesn't hurt, you know. Like if somebody says, you know, I'm just in a dream right now, well, you slap them in the face and see if they still think they're in a dream. I mean, the suffering is real due to our misconception, misidentification. You know, the misidentification is the whole problem, right? Prabhupada gives just so many wonderful analogies, right? So if you have this crazily, incredibly complicated mathematical formula, right? But if the first one, 1 + 1 = 3, then the whole rest of all that complicated thing is just a mess, right? So the whole foundation. So because of our identifying with matter, then everything else screwed up. So the whole thing is to get out of the illusion of who we think we are and wake up to the reality. And that reality ultimately is Jivera Swarup Hoya Krishnara Nityadas. We're God's servants. We're nothing else. Everything else is just, at best, an identification for this life. Right? Because that's what's the power of bhakti is so important in this regard, because other transcendental endeavors, right? You'd all have to be sannyasis. You have a daughter, you can't be a spiritualist. You have a daughter, you can't be a spiritualist. Right? Because it's so hard to miss the identification. To identify as spiritual, not material, is very difficult to do, right? So if you have a child, that's so much identity with your body, right? You can't forget about marriage also. That's not going to work either, right? But the power of bhakti is so strong that have your child, have 10 children, right? And have a home and have a car and a job and all those things and connect everything to Krishna. Anashaktasya vishayan yartaham upujyanjita nirbanda Krishna sambandhe yuktam vairagya uchate. That this is real renunciation. Real renunciation is not just to go off and be a sannyasi and live in the forest and try to understand that I'm spiritual. Real renunciation is to see everything connected with Krishna. So have children and bring them up in a God-conscious way. No problem. Well, it's not easy as it says, but I mean, that's the power of bhakti that is not there in other spiritual practices. So we'd be in big trouble if we all had to be sannyasis and sannyasinis or whatever, right? We probably wouldn't have too many people at the class. Right? So this is the power of the bhakti. And here's a nice example. I was going to show a picture of this, but unless you're on, are you on the internet also?
Yeah.
You want to just do a quick Google search for an image of a moon reflected in water? Okay. So as the moon reflected on water appears to the seer to tremble due to being associated with the quality of water, so the self-associated with matter appears to be qualified as matter. Right? It's such a, these examples are so powerful, aren't they? Right? So the moon is there. It's not affected by, you know, the, you know, lake whatever, lake where I grew up, Lake Ronkonkoma, or, you know, Lake Michigan, or what are the lakes around here? There's a Lake Ann. I once went to Lake Ann. And with my family, my brother and stuff, and we were swimming in Lake Ann. It's in Virginia and all that. And the water was so warm. And only later we found out it was warm because there's a nuclear reactor there. Water. I wonder if we were, you know, like effulgent. Yeah, there's one. That's perfect. So you see, there's the moon. Clear. Okay, that's even better. Thank you. Yeah. So there's the moon. It's just the moon. But look how it look in the reflection in the water, it looks like it's moving and being transformed. Right? So here, as a moon reflected on water appears to the seer to tremble due to being associated with the quality of water, so the self associated with matter appears to be qualified as matter. Because we're identifying with the reflection rather than the reality. You were going to say something?
Can you summarize, Prabhu? I'm kind of lost. Like
about the moon?
We are in an identity crisis.
We're an identity crisis. That's a good way to put it.
And then
we all think we're Napoleon.
Right. And because of that, we identify ourselves with matter or modes. I got that part. But how is that desire coming into the picture, like the primordial boo-boo, like we wanted to...
The primordial boo-boo?
Is that what you're saying? Yeah.
The primordial boo-boo? I've never heard that one before, the primordial boo-boo. It's inexplicable. It is hard to explain. And that's why in the 13th chapter, verse 20 of the Gita, Prabhupada says, basically, Krishna knows. Yeah. Let's read a little bit of the purport. The Supreme Soul, the personality of Godhead, is compared to the moon in the sky. Is that clear? And the living entities are compared to the reflection of the moon on water. The moon in the sky is fixed and does not appear to quiver like the moon on the water. Actually, like the original moon in the sky, the moon reflected on the water should also not quiver, but because of being associated with water, the reflection appears to be quivering, although in actual fact, the moon is fixed. The water moves, but the moon does not move. Similarly, the living entity appears to be tainted by material qualities like illusion, lamentation, and miseries, although in the pure soul, such qualities are completely absent. The word pratiyate, which means apparently and not actually, like the experience of having one's head cut off in a dream, is significant here. The reflection of the moon on the water is the separated rays of the water, not the actual moon. I'm sorry, of the moon, not the actual moon. The separated parts and parcels of the Lord entangled in the water of material existence have the quivering quality, whereas the Lord is like the actual moon in the sky, which is not at all in touch with water. these analogies are helpful to give us some understanding what's going on. Okay, shall we carry on? But that misconception of self-identity can be diminished gradually by the mercy of the personality. This is our saving grace, this verse. But the misconception of self-identity can be diminished gradually. So it's not going to happen overnight. If you think you're going to wake up tomorrow and you completely identify as, you know, servant of Krishna and nothing, you know, that's not going to happen either, right? It's not going to happen overnight. And how does it happen? By the mercy of the personality of Godhead, Vasudev. And how do you do it? Through the process of devotional service to the Lord in the mode of detachment. When the senses are satisfied in the seer supersoul, the personality of Godhead, and merge in him, all miseries are completely vanquished as after a sound sleep. Anyone here ever get a sound sleep? You had last night? Okay. Yes. Actually, I was at a meeting of all the sannyasis, GBCs, and gurus last week. I was facilitating it in Mayapur. And we were talking about self-care because a lot of those leaders, they travel constantly. And they don't take care, you know, they go to one person's house and they cook them deep-fried everything. Then they go to somebody else's house and they cook them deep-fried Gujarati everything with so much sugar in it, right? And, you know, it's not easy to remain healthy in that all constantly traveling and if you're not strict. So we turn to a little bit towards rest because it's hard. Often, you know, they're supposed to set the example, so they think they, like, have to go to Mangal Arati every day at 4 in the morning. And then they're up late at a program, and they're too busy during the day to take a nap, you know. So it was kind of interesting, I won't mention who, but one of the sannyasis say, I make sure I get 7 hours sleep every night. And they're all looking at him like, wow, that's interesting. That's a good idea, you know, like that. So anyway, it says here, that just as you feel it, and you had a good rest. Simply, now here's the specific cure. Simply by chanting and hearing of the transcendental name, form, etc. of the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, one can achieve the cessation of unlimited miserable conditions. Therefore, what to speak of those who have attained attraction for serving the flavor of the dust of the Lord's lotus feet. So actually having a taste for service. That's what we're trying to do here with this Sunday Serve program, is give devotees a taste for, you know, serving. So they get together before the service, they do the service, and they have a post-mortem is what we call it at work, but a brief afterwards to talk about what their realizations were from doing that service. It's a joyful thing. Text 15, Vidura said, okay, so now we're back to Vidura, right? And he says, O powerful sage, my lord, all my doubts about the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the living entities have now been removed by your convincing words. My mind is now perfectly entering into them. Of course, he then asks 40 more questions, but he's not on this topic. On this topic, he's okay. But he's a very inquisitive person. He, just like the other one in the Bhagavatam, is Shonaka Rishi. He's always asking questions. Prabhupada writes in the purport, the science of Krishna, or the science of God and the living entities, is so subtle that even a personality like Vidura has to consult persons like the sage Maitreya. You know, with the stuff that we covered today, we tried to make it interesting and lively, but it's quite deep philosophy. It's no joke. O learned sage, your explanations are very good, as they should be. Disturbances to the conditioned soul have no other basis than the movement of the external energy of the Lord. He got it. He like passed the test. This is like his, you know, his. He passed his test. He took his IAS exam, they say in India. That, those who aren't from India, the IAS is like this really, it's, there's two really tough exams that I know of. The IAS to become an IAS officer, it's one of the top civil servants, and then the test to get into IIT. Like 600,000 people take the test and they accept 6,000 students or something like that, some crazy number. Both the lowest, this is a very interesting verse. So who's happy in this world? Two people are happy, okay? The lowest of fools, and he who is transcendental to all intelligence, they enjoy happiness, whereas persons in between, they suffer the material pains. So we're in the middle there someplace. So we're and because Prabhupada says the lowest of fools don't understand material miseries. Yeah. But, my dear sir, that's how he addressed it, my dear sir, I am obliged to you because now I can understand that this material manifestation is without substance, although it appears real. So we know it's real, right? That's real, but it's not real in the sense that it's temporary. That's the Vaishnava conclusion, right? Right? If you get hit over the head, it actually hurts. But it's temporary, as his body is temporary. So in that sense, this world is unreal. But it's not like in the sense, well, I can drive on the left side of the road and, you know, it's not, well, it's not the best example, but Groundhog Day, you know that movie, where, you can just keep, you can go, he ran the car off a cliff and he jumped off a building and it didn't matter because he just, next day he'd wake up as himself. No, you can really do stupid things in this world and suffer. But even those stupid things you do are temporary. Yes, Boo?
The statement, the lowest of fools and the transcendentalist both are happy in this world, but the happiness is on, not on the same level.
No, right? It's being a little sarcastic.
Yeah, okay. So yeah. It's like ignorance is bliss kind of thing? Like
Yes. Okay. The real point is that we're somewhere, all of us are somewhere in the middle. And therefore we experience material pains.
Yeah. So the lowest of the persons are not actually happy.
No, they're not. They're just so oblivious.
Suffering. Yeah.
So, but it's a little tongue in cheek, as we say. It's not the real deal. Okay, we have a couple more minutes. By serving the feet of the spiritual master, one is enabled to develop transcendental ecstasy in the service of the personality of Godhead, who is the unchangeable enemy of the Madhu demon and whose service vanquishes material distresses. And finally, let's see. Persons whose austerity is meager can hardly obtain the service of the pure devotees who are progressing on the path back to the kingdom of Godhead, the Vaikunthas. Pure devotees engage 100% in glorifying the Supreme Lord, who is the Lord of the demigods and the controller of all living entities. And in the purport, Prabhupada writes, even if one has no assets of favorable austerity, so no good karma, no, you know, all that stuff, if he nevertheless takes shelter of the Mahatmas, who are engaged in chanting and hearing the glories of the Lord, he is sure to make progress on the path back to home, back to God. So that conjures up another example of analogy, right? That Srila Prabhupada would sometimes teach us, right? That, and we've spoken about this before, but we'll just end with this. That if you meet a very rich person, and you know, let's say you're middle income, and you want to win their favor, what can you bribe them or give them to win their favor? But if you give their child maybe one little sweet or something, and the child is so happy and smiling, you've won that person's favor. So really, so that's the analogy of associating with and getting the encouragement and blessings of devotees of the Lord. That by getting their blessings, then Krishna, God, is pleased. Like that. So it's not just that we think, I have my relationship with God, everyone else can go to hell. You know, no, actually a spiritually minded person understands that each and every person is has God, has Krishna in their hearts. And in the Bible, right, Jesus says, the way you treat the least of me, right, is the way that, you know, so one, a devotee is meant to have a service attitude towards all living entities, including Mother Earth, right, and what to speak of those that are spiritually advanced. So really we go through our path of progress, our path of spiritual progress is one of humility and service. Like that. So on that note, there is not class next week. I'm going to be in St. Louis, actually. I have to be in St. Louis for... Okay, no class next Sunday, because I'm going to be in St. Louis. No class on the 12th, because that's Gaur Purnima. 19th, definitely class. So have a nice week. And thank you. Hare Krishna.